It is a point of pride with you that this book does not contain charts and graphs and calculus and regression analyses. Why is that important to you?
Because I want people to read it. And if you make it unreadable, they're not going to read it.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Genius of Thomas Sowell podcast. I'm your host, Alan Wolin. Today we're going to discuss why Thomas Sowell deserves to win a Nobel Prize in Economics. This topic is inspired by an essay written a couple of days ago by an economist named John Cochrane, who, like Sowell, is also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. John's essay, entitled Sowell Nobel, lays out the case why the Nobel Committee should finally recognize Tom Sowell for his many contributions to the field of economics. I'll put a link to John's essay in the show notes. John will be joining us later in this episode to discuss his essay and go into more detail about why Sowell deserves a Nobel Prize. But before I bring John into the conversation, I'd like to make 5 special announcements. Number 1. I want to tell you about a great smartphone app called Libby. I do all my reading on Libby, and it's a way of reading most of Thomas Sowell's books for free. It works through your local public library. All you need is a library card, and you can borrow pretty much any book for 21 days at no charge, just like a lending library. This applies to audiobooks as well. This is one of the best-kept secrets out there. Hardly anyone knows about it. I know we have a lot of listeners outside the U.S., and I'm sorry, but I think Libby only works in the United States for now. But I'm not 100% sure of that. It might be worth looking into. Number 2. The website for this podcast can be found at tomsowell.com. The site is designed for someone who is finding out about Thomas Sowell for the first time. It shows all his major books, grouped by category, provides a couple of video interviews with Sowell, lists some of his best quotes, and shows off some of the promotion we are doing for this podcast. Check it out when you have time. Number 3. This is a really special announcement. I think you're going to like this one. I put together a collection of 50 of my favorite Thomas Sowell quotes, and I had them designed by a graphic artist with 4 different illustrations of Tom Sowell. I then printed them onto sticky post-it notes, and I'm planning to mail them out to listeners of this show, no charge, not even for the shipping and handling. Each post-it note pad has 50 different quotes in it, and you can stick them pretty much anywhere you think people will see them. On a bathroom mirror, on a door, car window, inside a book, you name it, they stick everywhere. So if you're like me and you get pleasure out of introducing people to the ideas of Thomas Sowell, you're going to love these post-it notes. Check out tomsowell.com on page 18 of the website. I've put some photos of these post-it notes so you can see how great they look. Each post-it note has a QR code in the design, which, when someone points their cell phone camera at, it directs them to tomsowell.com on their phone's web browser. If you'd like a free pad, email me your name and mailing address, and I'll send one to you at no charge. My email is wolinallen@gmail.com, and you can find the spelling in the show notes. Number 4. If you'd like to participate in this podcast, make a comment or ask a question, just record your comment or question using your smartphone. Then email it to me at the email address in the show notes. On a future episode, I'll play your comment and respond to it. Give it a shot. Number 5. If you're enjoying this podcast and you'd like to help spread the word about Thomas Sowell, please rate the show 5 stars on Apple or whatever other platform you listen to podcasts on. If you're feeling particularly inspired that day, perhaps you can also write a review of the show. Both of those things helps get our show noticed by new listeners, which is always a good thing. My mission is to disseminate the ideas of Thomas Sowell to as many people as possible, because I believe that if more people had his cognitive tools, the world would be a better place. Now I'd like to introduce you to John Cochrane. John used to teach finance and economics at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. He is now the Rose Marie and Jack Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. John writes a blog called The Grumpy Economist, where he explores many topics in the field of economics. He writes books as well as columns for the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, and appears on many podcasts, as well as hosting his own podcast called The Grumpy Economist. John Cochrane, welcome to the Genius of Thomas Sowell podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're talking on October 8th, 2021, and the Nobel Committee is announcing the winners of this year's prizes on October 11th, in 4 days. You published an essay called Sowell Nobel 2 days ago, which makes the case that Thomas Sowell should definitely win this year's economics prize. You mentioned that Sowell deserves a Nobel for his contribution to economics in general. And you point out that given the societal focus on racial issues over the past few years, what you call a, quote, hot button issue, that Thomas Sowell definitely deserves a prize for his penetrating economic analysis of race. Tell us more.
Indeed. Now, I don't want to underestimate Tom's broad contributions to all sorts of things. And also, by the way, this is an annual hobby horse of mine. they could have given it to him anytime over the last few decades. I'd prefer to be precise. We can't summarize, I don't know how many 20 books in the time we have. Let me give you one point that I found particularly interesting and well-documented and sort of the kind of thing Tom Sowell does. Tom pointed out long ago, it's one of the first things I read of his, that if you look within subgroups in the US that look exactly alike to white people, you find great differences in economic and other kinds of achievement. So, for example, when you look at Black Americans, if you look at Nigerian immigrants right now, are some of the highest performing, highest economic achievement, highest achievement groups we have in the U.S. Blacks from the West Indies, West Indian immigrants, have done very well in the United States. If you look among Asians, you will see big differences in different groups that came to the U.S. at different times. There's several waves of Chinese immigrants who've done very well. Chinese immigrants from different parts of China do differently. Some of the others, like the boat people, have not done so well. Tom points out that people come to this country under different circumstances and from different groups. So many of the Chinese who came to America were for generations educated and traders and merchants, the kind of people who come to the United States and become traders and merchants and do very well and have a strong educational background. Tom puts this up to cultural questions, but it's just a fact. So here is a very uncomfortable fact for the story that the only reason different people do differently is systemic prejudice by whites in the U.S. People that white people can't tell apart do remarkably differently and in suggestive ways. Now, this is a great fact, not just for racial questions, immigration. This tells us a lot about which kind of immigrants do well and do poorly. I think it pokes a lot of holes in, I tried to challenge Charles Murray on this, how people come here is very important. What subgroups they come from is very important. And you don't just select randomly from a country when thinking about why you have racial gaps in the U.S. So anyway, there is a fact. It's an uncomfortable fact to the current narrative. I think it has all sorts of implications for all sorts of things. And Tom Sowell documented that fact in unshakable detail.
Is there anybody else who's done as good a job documenting that as him?
Oh yeah. So there is a scholarship of economics of race. Gary Becker is famous for it. Bob Vogel is famous for it. They both got Nobel Prizes for, well, Bob Vogel for his study of slavery in many ways in the Civil War. Glenn Lowry does great work. Roland Fryer does great work. And there's also white people who do good work on these issues. I mean, this is not a small field. And in fact, Tom Sowell being the leader of a large field, the one that's not very politically popular these days, is another reason why he deserves a prize for that and for other things. I hate to pigeonhole Tom as just an economist of race because he happens to be Black as well. But I think it's very unfortunate when we pigeonhole and say, you know, Black people may only do race economics. But as it happens, that is one of the many spectacular contributions Tom has.
You mentioned in your essay that Sowell's, quote, deeply fact-based research approach. Now, maybe I'm naive, but don't all economists deploy a fact-based research approach?
No. Now, okay. Many economists, like last year's Nobel Prize winners, who won it for game theory and auction theory, do economic theory. So they work out equations and they think about how would you play different games and prove theorems about how you might play different games. That's not bad. That just is what it is. And many other economists do statistical analysis. Now, that is in some sense fact-based. I didn't mean to disparage statistical analysis, but its contribution is in using statistical methods to tease causality out of correlation, which is the hard thing of what economics does. Rich people drive Mercedes. Does that mean that if you drive a Mercedes, you'll get rich? Probably not. But that's getting the causal things out of correlations is hard. Most economists these days use fancy statistical techniques to try to tease causality out of data like that. Tom writes books. And he assembles facts like what is the economic status and progress of different subgroups among ethnic and racial groups, like the one we talked about. And you'll see great prose and lots of facts, not a lot of fancy equations and statistical estimates. And that's what I meant by fact-based.
Okay. Now, in your essay, you appeal to the Nobel Committee to put aside partisan politics and give Sowell the prize. I know the Nobel Committee has done this in the past, but is there any reason to think they can still do this in the very polarized present?
Well, I hope I didn't say put aside, because I hope I didn't want to say anything bad about the Nobel Committee in right now. They have a very hard job. I've talked to a few committee members. Figuring out who deserves a prize every year is a really hard job, and I salute them for their efforts. And our partisan politics, by the way, do not extend to Sweden. They've got their own troubles. But there is, we live in a moment where many things are politicized and there is a temptation to make points. And you're certainly not going to win plaudits from the people who consider themselves in charge of who's good and who's bad these days for Tom Sowell's prize. I did point out, for example, the American Economic Association, who in the wake of the George Floyd protests put up a list of who we should read about racial issues and neglected Tom Sowell, Glenn Lowry, Roland Fryer, as well as white authors like Gary Becker, economists all, spectacular contributions all. And you can sense a political drift in that kind of thing. So, the Nobel Committee would be going against sort of the political drift that doesn't like conservative. Tom is a conservative. He's a libertarian. He's a free marketer. And that's not very popular these days. And, you can't just say, well, that's his political opinions, because the stuff he writes about has a free market bent to it. But I trust the committee in the past has given the prize to people whose opinions and whose work supports that kind of thing. So I think that they ought to be able to do that again.
Now, when you like reach out to like the American Economics Association and you say, well, why didn't you include Sowell on there? What do they even say? I mean, what could their answer possibly be?
I don't know. I have not. I have not made a fuss about this. I have given them a year to figure out they need to fix this on their own, quietly, because I don't want to make it my cause.
Right.
But it's still up there. It's a year later, and so I am going to try to reach out and say, isn't it time? I can understand how, in the upset of the event, one might write things that are a little bit hasty. But now that it's institutionalized, the list, this is a list of readings that you ought to put on your reading list. There are many deans who are telling economics professors, you must have authors of color on your reading list. I have been told that there are DEI training things that reference this list. The American Economic Association has approved this list of authors of color and list of racial issues that you must use. So I think it's time for the American Economic Association to take it seriously. They said, we devote ourselves, like, this isn't a quote, but we devote ourselves to reading and educating ourselves. Okay, it's been a year. You haven't changed this memo. You haven't changed this reading list in 1 year. Since you're devoting yourself to educating yourself, maybe after a year, there's you got a little bit better to say on the topic. And let's put Tom Sowell on that reading list.
In your essay, you briefly mentioned Sowell's book, Knowledge and Decisions. I've always felt that this is his most important work, and one for which he should have won a Nobel Prize back in 1980 when he wrote it. It's not the kind of book you read or you browse. It's more the type of book that you really study. And I plan on devoting several podcast episodes to discussing this book. I just want to say that I'm really glad that you mentioned that book. And Jason Riley, in his biography of Sowell, I don't know if you've read it yet, but he talks about how important that book is as well. And I really try to promote that book to people because it is amazing.
That is, and it's not about race. It's no. About economics. It is a book I love as well. And it's the second in the step, just for your listeners. What is this book and why does it matter? Friedrich Hayek wrote an article in the 1940s. I'm going to get the title wrong. The Value of Information in Economics, something like that. I should have prepared with the title. Sorry. You can look that up and put it on your blog. And it's just an essay, and it is taught in every graduate program in the world. What does it say? And there's no equations in it. What does it say? It tells you that prices, the price system, are like the nerves of the economy. They are what communicates things. Prices in political thought, prices are how we transfer incomes. I'll hold down the price of gas so that poor people can get to work easier. In economics, prices are incentives. The price, a higher price of gas tells everyone there isn't that much around. Why don't you carpool today? Why don't you buy a better, more fuel efficient car? Prices tell us all the information. How do you know if we should all hold back on something? Well, prices give us that information, which no planner can ever have. So they are the signals, they are the repositories of information, and that's what keeps an economy going. Beautiful essay. One that people have tried, but hasn't really made its way into our formal modeling. And our formal modeling, central planning works just as well as the free market. That's like the main theorem you learn. what's wrong with that? Well, Hayek said what's wrong with that. And Tom wrote a whole book. So it's really the only person who has been able to take that Hayek insight and show us how it applies in grand detail in the market. So it's somebody needs to write more books on it, but that it's just an incredibly valuable piece of how the economy works that doesn't get celebrated enough or read enough, in part because there isn't equations that 1,000 assistant professors can write papers about in there, but there is that possibly the most important insight. And I don't want to say this is the most important one of Tom's books because I haven't read all of Tom's books. He writes them faster than I can read them. And education is important and delayed speech is important and everything else is important. But that one really made an influence on me.
I think that one sort of rewires your brain and how you think about economic issues. And he doesn't refer to a capitalist society. He refers to it as a price coordinated society, which I always found very telling.
Yes. Capitalism is a bad word for what we do,
right?
Because it gets the Marxist view that what's important is the accumulation of capital. No, what's important is the freedom of prices to signal scarcity or abundance to guide us all. That's the Adam Smith's invisible hand. The invisible hand is the price system. And he's exactly right. That's why Chicago calls it price theory. Anyway, prices are the signals that it's the neurons in the brain.
So one question for you about this Nobel Prize in economics. I know this prize is famous. Once someone has won it, they will forever be referred to as a Nobel laureate, so-and-so, as if that's their most important distinction in life. Why is this prize so important? The economics prize is sponsored by the Swedish Central Bank, which is obviously a very biased organization, as all central banks must be. The prize is, I think, 10 million Swedish krona, which in today's dollars is 1.1 million. I assume you have to pay taxes on that prize money. So let's say you're left with about 850,000, which is still not bad.
Your high-end marginal tax rates are a lot more than that. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Why is this prize so important? And are there any other competing prizes in economics which are as coveted as this prize?
Well, I'm an economist. One of the reasons the price is more important, it is a lot of money. So that other prizes don't come with that much money. I think that actually makes a difference. But it's important because of its reputation. And I'm speaking to you, Nobel Prizes in some of the other fields where, I don't know, my own opinion is they haven't been doing such a good job. And if you gain a reputation for making really good picks, then it becomes a coveted and widely respected prize. And if you gain a reputation, well, let's say it, the Peace Prize and the Literature Prize are not widely regarded now as giving the prize to the most deserving people around, even by the terms of the original will. So the Economics Prize, I think, lives on its reputation of having made really good choices in the past. And if they continue to make good choices, then they will be a well-respected prize. And if they don't, then it'll slowly sink into obscurity or political conformity like everything else in our society. So hang in there, committee. They're working really hard at this, but there's all sorts of temptations.
Now, you're a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford, and so is Tom Sowell. What do senior fellows do? Do they get together regularly for senior fellow happy hours? Do you and Tom Sowell have much contact professionally, or do you just pass each other in the men's room now and then? And I think the general public really wants to know what goes on behind the curtain over at the Hoover Institution. Can you tell us any juicy stories?
Well, if I could, I wouldn't, because but it's a lot more boring than you think. You know, my life consists of I get up, I exercise, I write, I do Zoom calls, so, you know, with people like you, and I make my wife dinner and I go to bed and start all over again. There's a lot of activity. We each of us have different working methods. I attend a lot of the seminars at Stanford. I run one with John Taylor. I do this Goodfellows podcast, your competitor, which I have to plug, which is a great conversation I have with Neil Ferguson and H.R. McMaster. Some of us hang out in the lunchroom. Tom, I have never seen here. I mean, I've seen him come once. The secret to Tom Sowell's success is he guards his time incredibly well. And one of the ways in which he writes so many books is he doesn't hang around the office chatting with, you know, wasting his time with people like me. that's an admirable work ethic, and it's working for him.
Now, is there any talk over at Hoover about changing the name from Fellows to some other more gender-neutral name in order to smash the patriarchy implied by that word?
Well, we have women who are fellows. What's wrong with that? I never thought of fellow as a gendered word until you brought it up. So please be quiet.
Don't cause any trouble.
Don't cause any trouble. I can't think of, I mean, changing titles in academia is, you know, takes years. So I don't want to be on the committee to consider new titles to degender the name fellow. So let's just proclaim that fellow is gender neutral and go on.
I hope you know I was just kidding about that. John Cochrane, thank you for joining me on the Genius of Thomas Sowell podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Let's hope we're right this time.
We'll find out in 4 days. Thanks.
Thank you.